Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rebecca Stevens. This is Spiritually Speaking with Jen and Rebecca. And we are coming to you live this evening. I am finding myself in Manhattan, and I've got Jen joining me from Geneva, Illinois, from the Chicago area. And we have a special guest tonight, Zachary Walter. We're going to introduce him a little later. But I just wanted to welcome everyone to the show. This is a call-in show. So if you hear anything that you want to talk about, respond to, ask about, get more information on, the call-in number is 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. And as I mentioned
earlier, Rebecca.
Hi, Jen. I've got Jen with me. I am good. I am good. How are you, Jen?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be on the line. I'm glad to hear you leading us off tonight on the show. I'm really excited about this show. I am always excited about all of our shows, but this is a special blessing for me. It's nice to know that my colleague and partner in on the Life Coach Radio Network, Rebecca Stevens, is just making a way with this show, and I'm excited about it. So, and Zachary, we're glad to have you on the show tonight, and just fun to be here.
It is fun, and Jen spent about 15 minutes with me going over how to kind of host the show from the soundboard, if you will. So this is my first time at the wheel, and I'm excited to guide us through our evening tonight. Given that, I just want to do a quick, brief springtime meditation. So I've been seeing a lot of flowers coming up, a lot of blooms, a lot of sunshine. The air is a little warmer. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge all the changes that are happening in the world. So if you'll just take this time to close your eyes and imagine yourself in a place where you're very, very comfortable, where you feel taken care of, where you feel warm, where you feel at home. And imagine that this place is full of beautiful items or pictures or anything that makes you feel special. Imagine that you are just surrounded by your favorite memories. And now imagine that your memories are guiding you into what's next in your life, guiding you into a future. Imagine that what is past is present is future. What is future is present. Think about what it means to be ready for something to change. Think about what it means to take all of the things that have happened in your past and have them prepare you for something new. Imagine what it means to be completely comfortable. And within that comfort, being completely comfortable with change, with something new, something fresh. When you're ready, just open your eyes. And thank you for doing a little springtime meditation. And with that, I want to introduce our guest for this evening. Zachary Walter is a very, very, very dear friend of mine in that he is my partner, and he is also my colleague. We've known each other for a little over, almost 2 years through work and other colleagues, and we both found ourselves in the same spot last fall, and he is graduating from Union Seminary this spring. And I guess I'll let you, Zachary, say hi and say anything else you want to say about yourself before we move.
Hi.
Thank
you.
Welcome, Zachary. This is exciting. We're glad that you're on.
Thank you, Jen. I'm excited to be here, and thank you for inviting me. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to being here and looking forward to graduating this spring. A little nervous about what comes next, but I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And I think
everyone in their third year of graduate school who sees graduation looming on the horizon starts getting a little edgy about, what is next? Where do I go from here? How do I start this particular sort of iteration of my career? So I think these are all really important questions.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to talking through tonight and inviting others to join the conversation.
And Jen, I would love to hear about your seminary, sort of, how it felt when you were getting ready to come out of seminary and what sort of
how
was
did
on
I transition?
Can you tell us
and
about that?
I can, and I think I had a maybe more unique transition out of seminary. I took a year off between my second and third year, and I did a ministerial internship in a church in North Carolina. And
that's right.
So I was transitioning from that and coming back to Chicago. And I'd also recently, within the year previous, had gone through a divorce. And I moved all of my things that I hadn't necessarily moved the first time when I moved from Maryland to Chicago. After I left my house in Maryland and I went to North Carolina for my internship, I basically had everything with me. So I was like, wow, I've got a clean house. I've got to go through things. I had some space between my leaving and my needing to be in Chicago. So I had some space in order to really clean house and go through things. And inevitably, I think at a certain point in your life, you realize that you have way more paper in the world, or at least I would say that 15 years ago, those of us who lived through, survived the paper age, we have way more paper than we ever knew what to do with. And you get kind of inundated by paper. And this was early in the use of email and the internet to advertise jobs. So this is a long story, and trying to make a long story much shorter. I had gotten a job advertisement from the Divinity School. I was at the Divinity School at the University of Chicago. And I looked at it, and I remember reading it chose the organization called Protestants for the Common Good. It was the director of education and outreach. And I remember reading through the job description thinking, job for me. Too bad it's not open a year from now.
Yeah.
But I took the time and I printed out the job description and I threw it on one of the piles because literally there were piles of paper in my apartment in North Carolina. And so I was tackling the piles one by one. And I kid you not, every time I'd go to tack a new pile of paper, this job description was on top of it. Wow. And I know that sounds crazy. I know this sounds crazy, but I couldn't make this up. And I live alone. So it's like, okay, I finally got to the point where I was like, this is just ridiculous. This damn piece of paper is following me around the house. I remember kind of looking up towards the sky and saying, all right, fine. I will apply for this position, but I'm not going to get it because I'm going to put right in the job or in my cover letter that I'm only available to work half time until I finish seminary.
Right.
Because I still had a year to go. And I just was like, I'm not putting off finishing seminary for a job because I could just envision never being able to get back to finish.
Yep.
So, again, long story, much shorter. 3 months later, I was hired there half time.
Wow.
And I was there half time while I was in school full time, finishing my degree. And then when I finished, I went from half time to full time. So my transition was, and that was a different transition. That was a unique transition. You know, many times folks are coming out of seminary, particularly if they're looking for church positions as they are approaching graduation, you know, for folks who are in the Presbyterian tradition, they've passed their boards, they're basically have what they need to have in order to seek a call. They're out there. They're looking for a call. They're, you know, trying to discern where God is calling them to be and what God is calling them to do. And, you know, it can be an ongoing challenge. I know others who have gone into more nonprofit work and have chosen to do that after seminary. And again, it's a real spiritual discernment, you know, where is God calling me to be? And sort of, and having faith that the God that called you to seminary is also the God that is going to call you to what's next.
I like that. I think that's really good. That's a really good point. Something that someone said to me recently about the Presbyterian process is that, you know, the Presbyterian Church has, or at least PCUSA has, a salary minimum for full-time pastors. And so because, you know, so there are a lot of positions available in the church, but they're not full-time, they're quarter-time or half-time because the churches can't afford to meet the salary minimum. And, you know, things like that are sort of happening now. I think that, and actually I had another conversation with another Presbyterian seminarian who's getting ready to graduate. And she said, well, I thought that there would be all of these jobs like available and there really aren't. I mean, there's really not a lot of church positions available now, especially to recently graduated seminarians, and especially to people who, you know, want to stay or go to a specific area, you know, unless you're willing to go to, like, you know, Antarctica or something, you know, there's just not a lot of, there aren't a lot of positions available. And one of the reasons why we invited Zachary tonight is because he is getting ready to graduate. He will be in the candidacy process in the Lutheran Church, and so will not be ordainable, if you will, for a while. And even so, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to ask. So, Zach, do you need to now go and do a year at a Lutheran seminary? Is that still the sort of the policy?
Yes. And first I want to say, Jen, talk about following a call. It sounds like your call was pretty loud and clear with this paper sort of following you around. And what a blessing that is to have your call, especially while you're still in seminary or during your year off, to be so present. And that's, I think that's something that oftentimes seminarians like myself are really hoping for or expecting.
Yeah, no, and I get that, and I am here to tell you that I know that that is not typical.
No, just not.
Well, you know, and I would also say my call wasn't typical either. But you know, I really, you know, like I did not want to go to seminary. And I think some of our listeners have heard this story before. Like, I really didn't. Like, I was like, I wasn't like, no. I was like, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
Like, really and truly. I've encouraged folks over time because I went to seminary in my mid-30s because I felt like, okay, I give up. Like, I can't do anything else. I have tried, and I was successful in all of the other things that I did, but it was like God was not going to let up.
Right.
And I really wrestled with that because I wasn't sure that was, you know, that's great that that's what God wants, but I wasn't really clear that that's what I wanted.
Right.
So, you know, just... And so I finally said, all right, fine. Okay, cool. I'll go to seminary. And, you know, and I felt a lot of that same experience when I was going through my first call. But one of the things that really struck me about what you were saying, Rebecca, is that because there are so many small churches, and they're in other denominations, some denominations have, like, salary minimums, so that if a church is going to hire you for $20,000, they're not going to expect you to work full time. You know, it's probably a quarter time job or a half time job, depending on where in the country it is, because those are set by presbyteries. Versus in a more of a congregational system, there may not be that a presbytery minimum or a minimum salary. So that they are expecting you to work full time for next to nothing. So this is why we are very thankful for folks who are connectional enough in nature to say that, you know, it's not really reasonable in 2015 to ask somebody to work full time and I realize this is a call, and I don't want to sound elitist. And when I say that, I realize that I already am. That it's more than a minimum wage job, particularly when you've had to, and you are faced with paying back debt for college and seminary.
Yes.
This is a professional level position, and yes, it's a calling, and yes, you know, we do what we need to do because God has called us into this work.
Right.
But you've got to be able to put a roof over your head. You've got to be able to put food on the table, and if you have a family, to feed and clothe your family. And so the expectation is we really, you know, the congregation, regardless of their means, needs to try and step up in order to be able to, you know, if they want to have an educated professional clergy, then they then there's a necessity for this kind of minimum salary requirement. But I know from my denomination, which is the Disciples of Christ, we don't have that. And so I've known many people who've been able to get an initial first call because churches will call people early in their career because they can sort of expect to pay them less than if they were calling somebody who was later in their career. And yet these same people then, if they are seeking a second or a third call within the church, and particularly a lot of women friends that I know, to seek their second call is a much bigger challenge than when they were seeking their first call, which is something that I, even, you know, as a woman who came to seminary in my mid-30s, was completely unprepared for. So the first call can be easier than a subsequent call. And I wonder if that is even more the case for women. Than for men.
I just want to throw out our call-in number real quick. We are 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. We'd love to have you join us. This is a fascinating conversation. Jen, you have so much insight on this, and I really want to hear. So when Zachary graduates in May, he has some creative ideas about what it's going to be like to be a post-seminarian with sort of little to few job prospects. And this isn't just unique to Zachary. This is what's happening to most seminarians coming out of seminary now. The church is changing so much, and they're redistributing clergy. And so seminarians and post-seminarians are finding themselves having to be very creative and start things from the ground up and essentially start their own churches. So Zachary, tell us more about what you're thinking about and some of the things that you've sort of knocked around and how you've gotten to a place where you can imagine doing something like that.
Well, I'm hearing also about from Jen and also from Rebecca about your ordination processes and what the call process is like in your denominations. And the Lutheran Church has some pretty stringent requirements post seminary that you have to do, like the CPE program, for example. And
can you explain the CPE program?
CPE is Clinical Pastoral Education, which is it's kind of like an internship, and you spend some time counseling, most likely in a hospital. I think all of the programs at Union are in hospitals, and you spend time counseling some of the patients who might be might have significant mental disabilities or might be in hospice care.
It's a variety of things, and it's if you don't mind me jumping in.
No, please.
Zachary, it's chaplaincy training. So when people think about chaplains, like hospice chaplains or hospital chaplains, or not so much like college chaplains, that's sort of a different bailiwick, but folks who are trained to sort of be present with those who are suffering with health or, like, as you said, mental or walking through that journey to death, the end of life, right?
Absolutely. And so I'm just about to finish seminary, as I mentioned, and, you know, I still have a lot of hoops to go through, I guess. I have CPE training. I have my year in a Lutheran seminary that you mentioned earlier, Jen. And I also have an internship that I'll need to complete in a Lutheran congregation. And
now, is that a year long?
Yes, it'll be a year long internship.
Okay. Okay.
And all of these things are very exciting to me. But you know, when I received my call to come into seminary, you know, my experience was not of God calling me to mm-hmm. school, to mm-hmm. graduate school. Mm-hmm. You know, my experience was of God calling me to ministry. And I found myself very quickly before seminary hosting large 40 to 50 person events in my backyard that I didn't. I mean, that was God's work in my life, not my work. Mm-hmm. And that was very clear to me that, you know, God was telling me that I was going to be leading. And so as I look to graduate from seminary, I've spent a lot of time in discernment thinking about what it is that I need to do in order to meet that goals, less, you know, the goals of my denomination to consider me sort of worthy of pastoring. But what is it that God is asking me to do? And mm-hmm. in considering that and in trying to discern what that would be for me, I've stumbled across some interesting ideas of how to create community through singing, through embodying some of the healing practices of worship. And it very much, it's still in the idea stage. But what I've been doing is applying to grants from within the Lutheran Church to start my own ministry in Brooklyn, to let that feed my call instead of the other way around. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fascinating.
And so what I'm really hoping right now is that I'm taking a little bit of time in my ordination process. I'm still entering candidacy and in conversation with the formation and ordination committee at the Metropolitan New York Synod. But I'm taking a little bit of time to really flesh out what my ministry might look like. And I'm hoping that in the next 12 to 18 months, that might clarify itself in such a way that that the ordination process, for me in particular, might reveal itself.
Hmm. Can you explain, Zachary, a little bit about the grant that you applied for? What is that? Like, what's that called? Where's that money? What is that situation?
So in the Metro New York Synod in particular, there's a department called Developmental Ministries, and they have a grant called the Sower Foundation, named after the parable of the sower. The idea being, if you spread out mustard seed amongst as many places as possible, you know, some of the seed will land in rock, and some of it will get eaten by birds. And maybe a few of them will land in good soil and yield a full bloom. So the grant is a $10,000 grant given to basically idealists, to people who have just an inkling of where God might be calling them. Not necessarily seminarians, not necessarily people with any theological training or education, although I think that you know, there's a little bit of preference to seminarians. Mm. And so I've applied for the grant in hopes of also broadening awareness of how difficult life after seminary can be, and demonstrating that, you know, job prospects really aren't as promising as they might have been 10, 15 years ago.
Well, and I also think that job prospects aren't there, but also that the jobs that are available are not appealing to new seminary graduates, because, well, maybe it's just a union thing, but I see people at union who are looking for ministries that are revolutionary, that are new and different. And of course, you know, I have to do my plug for St. Lydia's Dinner Church in Brooklyn, you know, which is a community of like, which is a completely different church model. And that's the kind of thing that seminarians are looking for now. You know, it's rare that you see seminarians looking for, you know, associate pastor situations, you know, sort of get them started on their career. People are wanting to do things that are change the world or that make a difference. The Presbyterian has a similar program, sort of a grassroots supporting program called 1001 Worship Communities, or is it 1001 Worship? But yeah, there was, the Presbyterian Church wants to fund 1001 new worship communities, which is really amazing. And it's happening. These places are popping up and people are showing up and worshiping. And it's really fascinating to watch.
It's really incredible to me that the denominations are, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jen.
No, I continue. I think you're both onto something. I think that what we're seeing is that the seminary education is not what it was, and I wouldn't even say 15 years ago or, you know, when I was a first-year seminarian. I would say, you know, 30 years ago when my husband was a first-year seminarian, and he could have sort of a relatively reasonable expectation of, if you wanted to be in parish ministry, as kind of old in the Presbyterian Church as a white straight guy, that was a reasonable expectation. And he's had that ministry, and he's had a good ministry, and I think, you know, and he's worked in a lot of settings. Some of them in rural settings, some of them in smaller cities, some of them in large cities. It really depends on, you know, where you are. I think that if the expectation of people who are entering seminary now, that I'm going to come out and I'm going to get a church in the city, and there are going to be tons of positions open in whatever my particular faith tradition is, in a place where I actually feel called to live and to worship, I'm not sure that that's a reasonable expectation. I think that folks who are entering seminary now really need to think about, okay, you know, where is that call? Where is that sense of call? What is this coming? Where is this coming from? And, is 3 years of graduate school, which is what seminary is, going to best prepare me for this call that I have on my life? Appreciating that, particularly for schools like Union, you will graduate with a significant amount of debt that will require that you pay back. So when you're in that mode, it's like, how do I figure this out? And I think you're really wise, Zachary, in asking the questions that you were asking and that you're posing. You know, even as you choose to go further through the ordination process in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Well, thank you.
Making
thank
that you decision much. About stepping out in those ways, is that where I'm feeling like God is calling me to be? We are right. definitely in, I think, a religious milieu that is becoming more and more post-denominational.
Yep.
So yep. what does, and then we need to ask, what does that mean for those who are coming out of seminary now, particularly in traditions where we value an educated clergy and a seminary yeah. trained clergy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just want to give out our call-in number real quick. 646-716-9397. We are live tonight talking to Zachary Walter, who is a Union Seminary student, soon to be a recently graduated Union Seminary student. And he is a candidate in the Lutheran Church for ordination in the ELCA. And he is talking about new ministry, new ways of worship, new ideas for getting people into a worship community that might not look like the traditional church. Tell us more about that, Zachary.
Well, I have a question because one of my motivations for starting this ministry, and both of you, you know, touched on this point, which is that, you know, we're on the one hand recent seminarian graduates and young seminarians and young church leaders are very much looking to do something active to help support and sustain a church that is struggling.
Hmm.
But what in addition, we're trying to build a professional life in a world that is very, very different.
Hmm.
My goal is to help bring what I know and love about my faith and my tradition to people who are unchurched, so to speak, who maybe mm-hmm. don't have the vocabulary that I was raised with.
Mm.
And I'm curious for both of you, what is your experience of that? How do you find this new unchurched generation, and how do you think the church can reach out to them? This is a particular question for me.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I see, I would say, like, from my line of work, like, there's a particular demographic that's unchurched, and that is artists and creative people. People who feel that there is there's not a place for them in church. Church is for old, stodgy, boring people, and there's not a lot of room for creativity or for something different. So for me to reach out to people is to have church be a creative space, to have church be a welcoming and open creative space where people can come and experiment with what makes them feel closer to God. So I think that's where I come from as an artist, and I'd love to hear your perspective, Jen.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, Rebecca and Zach, about my experience at Park Avenue Christian Church.
Mm.
And what I found there is that, and I don't think this is a particularly urban phenomenon, but I do think this happens a lot in the city, is that mm-hmm. people are seeking community.
Right.
So people, whether they're in urban settings or they're in really rural settings, they want to be in community with other people.
Yeah.
And the church has been a traditional place where community is found.
Right.
And I even think now, as Rebecca knows, I'm in that sandwich generation, so I'm dealing with my aging parents.
Mm.
And where is their community? Now they're deeply rooted in the house that they've lived in for, I kid you not, 61 years. And one of their neighbors across the street was there 5 years before they moved in.
Wow.
And they're really blessed to have a young couple that lives next door to them that has been there for like, 15 years.
Wow.
And so they're real rooted in place, and mm-hmm. they've got neighbors that they rely on, but they've also been a part of the church that they are a part of for the last 40 years. And so they're deeply embedded in the community of that church.
Yeah.
And last week when I needed to sort of make an emergency trip to visit my my parents there, and I was flying late at night, and my plane was landing at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
It was their pastor that came and picked me up at the airport.
I love it.
And that was, and again, that was, even though that's sort of the older school model of ministry and pastoral care, that still speaks to people sort of regardless of their circumstance. It's about, you know, not just being there on Sunday morning, but being there at midnight or 12:30 on Wednesday night, picking up the kid of your 80-something parishioner at the airport, because that's what the community needed to do in that moment.
Yep.
In order to let my parents and their community know that this is what we do for each other.
Yep.
And these are the ways in which we support each other.
And I want to throw it back to what we were saying earlier about salary minimums. And, you know, you don't pay somebody beans to do that kind of work. And again, I want to reiterate what you said, Jen, that you know, there's avoids an elitist tone in this, but that's hard work. You know, that's hard work. And when you talk about paying people what they're worth, you got to think about stuff like that. It's not just showing up on Sunday mornings. It's just
well,
not.
It kind of made me chuckle, Rebecca, that, you know, when we were saying, you know, paying people what they're worth, is that no one in ministry has ever paid what they're worth.
That is the truth.
You know, and that's okay. But there needs to be a floor, because people need to at least be able to put a roof over their head, make sure that they've got, you know, what they need in the way of necessities, and, you know, health care and things like that. So there's always room for improvement, but it's not as if tomorrow pastors are going to start to be paid what hedge fund managers are being paid. So, you know, it's just like, we're not talking about, like, we're just talking about, you know, getting by. Folks need to be able to get by. So.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I'll throw it back to Zachary too about that kind of thing. I mean, what do you think about when you come out of seminary and, you know, there's bills to be paid and things to be done. And you're talking about like starting a ministry. There's no salary minimum. Like what does that feel like? How do you, I mean, a $10,000 grant, it's not going to pay the rent. Like that does not pay the rent in Manhattan. Right?
$10,000 can be a lot of money in a lot of places, but not in Manhattan.
Not in Manhattan.
No. And that's a great point, Rebecca. And I you know, I, as much as I love my my passion, which is this ministry, and as much as I, you know, as much as I feel this call in my bones, you know, it's the ministry is something that's going to happen and that I'm going to need to do both for myself and for to understand my relationship with God right now. I'm not sure that ministry can pay my bills right now, and I'm fortunate enough to also be working in music and help start a music label before coming to seminary. I anticipate probably having to get back into the studio and do some more producing work with some of the other musicians and you know, some of the other guys from the label that I work with. Because I really, I don't see right now, my ministry paying the bills. And it's a sad truth. I really wish that it could, and I'm doing a lot of work to make that more of a possibility and advocating, especially within the ELCA, to make that more of a possibility. But with probably at least another 3 years before my ordination, and even after that, such a fairly low floor for pastor salaries. I really do see, you know, my bills being paid by something else.
Well, that's a really good point, Zachary, and I think that more and more, you know, it wasn't more than 100 years ago that those who served in ministry expected that they would be full-time in ministry.
Right.
My great-great-grandfather was a pastor, and he moved from Germany to Buffalo, New York, where he served in a German-speaking evangelical congregation that's now part of the evangelical reformed tradition within the UCC.
Oh, wow.
So he served this church in Buffalo, New York, which is now Pilgrim St. Luke's.
Wow, and that's a beautiful
story. He didn't have the expectation that ministry was going to be his full-time vocation. Like,
right.
He had a trade. He was a clockmaker.
Oh, wow.
So and I wonder, as much as I know that ministry is all-consuming, mm-hmm. and, you know, is definitely a full-time job, yeah. I know that certainly in my tradition within the Disciples of Christ, we're seeing more and more bivocational pastors
wow.
who yeah. are working full or part-time in other professions, and then working, you know, full or part-time within ministry contexts. And, you know, and I certainly find that even in my own experience. Right now I'm working, you know, I have my practice as a spiritual director and a certified life and leadership coach, as well as a half-time position within the church.
Yep.
And between the two of those, I can sort of piece together a reasonable
living
position. Right. Yeah. I can make a living. You know, I can you know, you can keep body and soul together.
Sure.
but all of us should know that nobody's going into ministry to get rich.
Absolutely not. And I, let me mention one more time. We've got about 10 minutes left. I want to just one more time give the call-in number, 646-716-9397, 646-716-9397. And I appreciate you saying that, Jen, about, you know, sort of nobody's going into it for the money. And I think that's a really important point to make clear. is that when we talk about what pastors or what clergy should get paid, you know, it's, you mentioned this before, but I just want to highlight, you know, that it's really about making a living and being able to support your family. And, I think, I wonder with the church changing so much, with people sort of having a big exodus, if you will, from traditional style worship, from traditional style architecture in churches, if people are seeing less of a need for clergy. We have lay people who are trained to do certain things. And I mean, I guess, you know, Zachary, I'd like to know what you think about that and how, like, what is the role of clergy and why is it important to have an educated, ordained person standing there?
Well, I suppose for me, it's important because of the depth and richness that is the tradition that I come from. And I don't know that educated clergy are necessary to bring spiritual healing. Mm. And I think that that is a unique gift that faith communities can offer to one another. So what I mean by that is that I don't think that educated, ordained clergy are necessary for a full, healthy, vibrant, worshiping community. Mm. And I think that those communities are healing. However, I do think that there's a place for educated, ordained clergy in perpetuating the value that is in our traditions. And that I think that that value ought to be demonstrated. And our traditions really have the resources to support that.
Can you talk more about what are the traditions that clergy are responsible for?
Well, for example, one of the things that I particularly appreciate about my seminary education is working knowledge of Greek and Hebrew.
Hmm.
And I think that one thing that often gets sort of left out of a lot of people's sort of basic fundamental Sunday school education or you know, children's story version of the Bible is that these stories are complex and were written in languages that don't translate very easily into English. You know, just a quick Google search into the variety of English translations of the Bible is enough to show anybody that there really is a lot of discrepancy in how these things can be translated. Mm-hmm. I think that a working knowledge of Greek and Hebrew is really valuable and ought to be preserved and carried on through our traditions for the purpose of helping us to get at the roots of where our traditions and where our faith comes from.
Hmm. I love that. That's really interesting. And I wonder too, when you, like, for example, when you preach, how does preaching work in this sort of like new church model, again, where it's sort of moving away from something more traditional? Like, are you going to preach for 20 minutes? And is there a traditional liturgy? And you're like, what might one expect showing up to a worship service that you would plan?
Well, the worship services that we plan tend to be mostly singing. We reserve space for sermons, and there's a absolutely prolific preacher in mm-hmm. our community right now who he's just wonderful and just absolutely fabulous to listen to. And I think preaching is an important part of my tradition and our traditions that we want to encourage and cultivate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hesitate to answer the question of what might someone expect mm-hmm. when they walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the purpose of retaining that flexibility. And Rebecca, right. you mentioned that one of the groups in particular who may not, one of the unchurched groups who may not be versed in the language or traditions of Christian worship
right.
are artists
mm-hmm.
and creatives.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, I mean, that's something that I'm really looking forward to tapping into is
right.
the creative potential of those groups.
So you can expect the unexpected.
The unexpected with a Jesus leaning flair.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, it's always remarkable to me, Rebecca. You know, I'm going on doing this show for close to 2 years now, so it's kind mm-hmm. of exciting. We think about our 2-year anniversary show that will be coming yep. up in early May. And I bring this up because we're almost at the end of the hour. And it always happens. It always happens. Because, you know, Zachary, we always go, oh, God.
You know,
we need another hour to
yeah.
unpack the entire conversation that yeah. we're having. And we love being able to open space on the internet, on the interweb mm-hmm. to give voice to all of these, I think, really important questions about, you know, what does it mean to be church? How
right.
will the church, what will the church be in the 21st century?
Right.
You know, how different will Christian communities look, you know, 20, 30 years from now than
yep.
they do now? And
yep.
And I'm really excited by that. I think that I certainly have an incredible amount of energy around what is it that the church can be and do in
yes.
order to really be that balm in Gilead that we
mm-hmm.
feel so, and often so, so much feel as though we need to be, and where are we being called to be a healing presence
yes.
in the world. And,
yeah.
and you know, so Rebecca, you know, we were talking about before we came on the air tonight that we're putting it out there, so I'm kind of putting it out there into the
yes.
into the internet. If you are interested in being a part of this show, if you want to get, you want to have a conversation about what the church means to you, go on our Facebook page.
Yep.
Like our Facebook page. Leave us a message. Let us know what you're about. Let us
yep.
Invite you to be a part of this conversation. Because
yes.
it's remarkable to me that I've now been doing this twice a month for almost 2 years. And Rebecca, you joined me a year ago
yeah.
In May, which is really exciting. And
yeah.
and this is just an ongoing conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really exciting to be a part of an ongoing conversation. So, Zach, thank you so much for being a conversation partner with us
mm-hmm.
tonight.
And thank
bringing
you
those
so much, thank
questions.
You,
I mean, it's awesome. And I love having these conversations. So thank you.
Thank you.
I love it too. And thank you so much, Jen. Thank you for calling in. I just want to remind everyone our next show is April the 6th, and we'll have more information.
No.
I'm sorry.
April the 13th.
Sorry, April the
13th.
Okay. Wait a minute.
April the 13th.
April
and
the 13th.
The 26th. Yep.
April the 13th and the 26th. Thank you, Jen. And April the 13th. Yes. And then. And we'll have more information on those shows on the Facebook page. Thank you, Zachary, for being with us tonight. Thank you all for listening. I hope that you got something that will move you, inspire you, and take you into tomorrow and the days beyond with a smile on your face and with a little bit of warmth in your heart. Thank you, Jen, for calling in. I hope this was a good experience for you. And
wonderful.
Good. And we will talk to each other and to all sometime soon. Have a wonderful evening. Good night.
God bless.